Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
This hour on the programme, as we continue Manx Radio's coverage ahead of this year's House of Keys general election, we're speaking to another candidate who's announced that he's going to be standing. We're joined now by 61-year-old Leslie Hansen, who will be contesting the newly merged constituency of Glenfeibre and Peel. Good afternoon, Leslie. Welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon.
Now, I say Glenfeibre, you say Glenfarber, I think, don't we?
It varies.
Does it? Is there a correct? Is there a definitive?
Glenfeibre.
Oh, right, OK, there's another alternative as well. To people who don't know you, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Right, born in the Isle of Man, I'm Manx. Went to school over here, then I went to university in Edinburgh, dental school, qualified there and came back to Peel to work.
OK. And this isn't your first rodeo as far as politics is concerned.
No.
How many times have you stood before?
The by-election last year and the previous general election.
In 2011, was it?
That would be about it.
Yes.
I came second. If I had an extra 31 votes, I'd have come first.
Really?
Yes.
That close?
Yes.
You see, that's a lesson to people who say, oh, I'm not going to bother voting, it doesn't make any difference. But actually, a lot of elections are very tight in the island, aren't they?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
The last by-election for Glenfarber was won by 4 votes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't pull your punches in your manifesto. You say that the island is being asset stripped. Explain that to me.
Well, basically, for years we've had a lot of money coming into the Isle of Man through the finance sector. Problems were solved by just throwing money at the problems. We now have a situation where there's a lot less money coming in. And now they are then to cover up the fact that they cannot balance the books. They are asset stripping the national wealth to balance the books. Now, under the Constitution of the Isle of Man, we can't borrow money, we can't run a budget deficit, we have to balance things or we'll get taken over. But eventually the assets are going to run out and then we will be taken over. It shows that they are not capable of managing their money properly. Now, I can go back long before we had the big financial money coming in, big financial sector, when it was just tourism, the basic stuff in the Isle of Man. The Manx government had a lot less money to play with and they weren't asset stripping and they were providing very good services for the people in the Isle of Man. And it can be, if it's done then, it can be done again today if the right people are in to do it.
All right, you talk about asset stripping, but I mean, they're not selling off the family silver, are they?
Yes, they are. They're selling off assets.
What are they selling off?
When you see for sale signs, there's buildings around the Isle of Man. I mean, I can't name all the buildings.
Government buildings.
Buildings owned by the government.
Yeah, yeah.
Not government buildings, but owned by the government, which are basically belong to the taxpayer.
Okay.
They're being paid for by taxpayers' money. And they should not be using taxpayers' money.
But isn't that money going back into the same pot for the benefit of taxpayers?
Yes, but they should be, instead of asset stripping, they should be balancing the books.
Okay.
Their income should be balanced with expenditure. The income is still very good, but I'm afraid to say when it comes to expenditure, there's things going out, and I'm afraid to say they're going out to things that most people don't agree with. Now, one of the things, my main things I found talking to people, and also I've noticed myself through my job, and that is priority for people in the Isle of Man is when talking to them, and that is health services.
Yeah.
People just want a good, decent, high standard health service. And that means when you pick the phone up to see a doctor, you see a doctor. If you turn up to casualty 24/7, it could be a car accident, it could be a heart attack. There's actually proper staff there available. And also there's adequate ambulances to get you there.
But can we afford that kind of 24/7 service?
So what you're saying now is we can afford everything else but a health service. Right, no. What we do is we prioritise our funds to provide that health service. And what's ever left, then that goes to spending on other things. It's just prioritisation. The money's there, it's priority. Now, the thing is, I can remember, I mean, how long have you been on the island?
18 years.
Right. Well, I can go back a lot longer than that. And in the 80s and 90s, well, 80s, 85, the population was about 60,000. Then we were told by all these economic experts that if we increased the population to 75,000, it would be an economic miracle. The streets would be paved with gold and everyone would be driving around in Rolls Royces near enough. That has been, there's been nothing further from the truth. The average person in the Isle of Man is far worse off as services. They have not kept up the services with the population. A lot of people at the top have made a lot of money. The banks have made a lot of money. Building firms, lots of money has been made by certain people. But the people in the Isle of Man, when it comes to services, have never been worse off. I'll give you just one example. As a dentist, I used to refer people to the maxillofacial department. In 1991, the waiting list for adults was 3 weeks, and for children, zero. Now it's months, and they've got lots of staff, but they have not provided enough. And I have said that I'm not criticising the staff or the ability of the staff. We just have not got enough of them. We need more nurses, and we need more doctors to get our health service to a level where it used to be.
Isn't this just a global phenomenon, though? Isn't it always the, isn't the case in other jurisdictions as well, that there just isn't the money? Since 2007, when the banks messed it all up, there isn't any money in governments anymore, is there? So there are all sorts of problems in the UK. There are problems here. There's certainly bigger problems in Ireland in so many ways. Is there any way to address that?
Yes, you just prioritise the funds for the health service. And you talk about problems in health service in 2007. Go to Germany. They actually have a proper health service over there. And do you know how they do it? Because per head of population, they spend three times as much on healthcare than they do in Britain. It's not a health problem, it's a money issue.
Okay, so what, people should pay more tax to have a better health service?
No, I've just said the government prioritises funds for the health service. And once we've got a high standard health service, which is acceptable to the population, what's ever left can be spent on any of their madcap schemes they want to spend it on.
OK. How would you balance the books then? So, I mean, it's all very well saying that madcap schemes and money should go into the health service first. That's fine. I mean, priorities is fine. But what do you do about everything else? Because there's a knock-on effect to a lot of these things, isn't there? So I'm guessing that you're saying that things like the promenade in Douglas shouldn't be resurfaced, or are you?
What I'm saying is everything that should be done in a way to maximise the employment and minimise expenditure. Now, at the moment, I mean, it's technology is basically the problem, in as much as 50, 60 years ago, when you put money into a public scheme, work scheme, it was hands and feet. So 90% of the expenditure went on wages. Now, when you do certain public schemes, about 75% goes on consultants, etc., and profits, but very little goes on because you need far fewer in the workforce. So what we've got to do is find schemes that employ people but do not require a lot of capital above the wages. Now, simple, just one scheme alone is putting back the railway to Peel, which I've advocated. The gravel comes from the government quarry. Steel is as cheap as it'll ever be, and we've got people to lay the track which are unemployed. So it's actually about costs the government nothing.
Isn't that too simplistic, saying that we've got unemployed people who could lay railway tracks? Surely that's a bit more specialist than that, isn't it?
No, it isn't actually. It's very basic. If the tracks are laid the way they were originally laid, well, over 100 years ago, it is a very simple thing to do.
So if, through no fault of your own, you found yourself unemployed, you'd be happy to go out on a gang and lay railway tracks?
Well, if you were paid the right wages for it. If you can target the money properly, you can afford to pay good wages. There's no reason why people can't be paid decent wages for it.
OK. Tell me about the public sector pensions problem that we've got then. What's the solution to that?
Well, first of all, they looted about, was it £300 million to pay it from the pension pot? Oh, sorry, public pension, right? No, private, right? For the National Health, National Pension. Public pension, basically, new people coming in should have to pay more towards their final pension. Now, different people in different categories of employment within government at the moment pay different percentages towards their pension. So everyone wouldn't be the same. Certain categories of employee would have to pay more. And these would be new employees. So we pass their job contract. So your job contract, if you want to apply for a job, the salary is such and such, your percentage towards your pension is such and such. If you like that, you apply for a job. If you don't like it, you don't. It's as simple as that.
And you don't think that that's unfair then to new entrants, and you don't think that that would lead to problems with recruitment?
Not for if it was targeted for civil service. And it's I don't really get the word unfair from. That's a job description. The wages, the pension contribution, If you wanted that job, you apply. If you don't, you don't.
Okay. The word unfair comes from the fact that a lot of people say to me that, you know, the people who are drawing pensions now have never had it so good because, you know, there are people who've got these gold-plated schemes and it's been all right for them and that's got, you know, that's been protected. It's the new entrants that are getting it in the neck and are going to have to pay an awful lot more for a smaller service. That strikes me as being unfair.
Well, these people are now collecting the pension at the moment, you know, as you say. Yes, you're quite right. But the point is, they entered into a contract on how much they had to pay in, and it's all written down. You can't breach a contract. You can't kind of go backwards and say, oh, we're going to rewrite it. That just will not happen.
Well, I've used that argument in the past, and people say, well, they did it quite easily with the bus drivers.
Well, I mean, they may have done. I don't know about that one. Okay. I can't comment.
All right, you're not in favour of increased means testing. Again, going back to fairness and making sure that the right services go to the right people. Why is that?
Well, I'm afraid to say, when it comes to means testing, you find the people who need it most don't know how to claim properly and never get what they're entitled to. And the people that get everything that's going are the people who know how to work the system. If you're going to have increased means testing, then there should be somebody, a volunteer, perhaps a retired lawyer, to help people fill in their form so they can claim the maximum or what they're entitled to. But I can tell you now, a lot of people who are entitled to things don't know they're entitled to them and are not applying for them, and government has an obligation to tell them how much they're not claiming for. But I'm afraid to say, It'll always be the same. The people that know the system backwards will get everything. And this is a problem with benefit systems. This is why I say if we had some sort of work schemes like railways putting them back, it's a win-win, and we pay people decent wages, that's a way of getting money into people's pocket and getting something back.
The next administration is going to have a pretty tough 5 years from what everybody tells me and from what I can see. Where do you think it's going to be able to make changes? Do you think that there is time to make any significant change to the way that we govern the Isle of Man?
I don't think there's any need for any significant change in the way we govern the Isle of Man. It just needs to be governed by people who know what they're doing. At the moment, these people can't balance the books. Their assets dripping. They've never had financial problems before, and they just can't cope.
Is that part of the problem, the fact that the people have had it too good for too long and don't know how to deal with
it? Yeah, as I say, when the money was coming in, they were solving every problem by throwing money at it, and now they just don't know what to do.
OK, so you don't think there's necessarily a need for reform in Tynwald? Do you think that the system works fairly well?
Well, I said this in the by-election at a public meeting. People start talking about, how the way Tynwald works and this would be altered and changed. I can tell you now, most people in the Isle of Man do not sit and worry about how the structure of Tynwald. And basically, I said in that public meeting, it's just like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. You know, it's the crew that have to be replaced.
Okay. So, I mean, you'd be an independent member if you're elected.
Yes, correct.
How much influence do you think you can have? You're one of 24 voices. So unless you're given a government department to run, which would be very unusual for somebody first term, what sort of impact do you think you can have on the next administration?
Well, I have been, just because you're not elected as an MHK or just a civilian, it doesn't stop you asking questions and writing to MHKs and writing to government, and I've been doing it for years. Now I can actually write to them and they might actually reply to some of the letters, but I can ask questions in Tynwald, and I'm afraid to say I brought matters up. And when I write to a certain department or the Chief Minister, I tend to send copies to every member of Tynwald so they know what's going on. And there's certain matters I brought up, and everyone just sits on their hands, and I'm saying to myself, well, why aren't independent members of Tynwald just asking this question?
Okay. Do you think that party politics can work in the Isle of Man? Your standing's an independent.
It can't happen. Simple reason that if you want the best people in the government, if you have a party and, say, four of them are good people, pretty, you know, good, and you have a certain amount, which is, say nine, who are average, right? If they got in, the people at the top of that party would have to appoint two ministers or top posts party members, even though they weren't very good. Consequently, there'd be really good people who couldn't take part in government because they said, well, you're a party member, we've got to put a party member, you're an independent, you see. So you're not going to get the best people in the ministry. So all you're going to get is jobs for the boys. See, in the UK, when it comes to a cabinet, there's about 250 people the Prime Minister can choose from.
Yes.
Well, see, that's not available in the Isle of Man. So basically, it would be a jobs for the boys, and it wouldn't be the best people in government, it would be the people who belong to a certain party.
Okay. I think you're involved, or you have been involved, with UKIP in the UK, haven't you?
My brother has.
Oh, right, not you.
Just in as much as they did, my brother said to me, are you interested in writing any reports? Not political things, but financial things and industrial things. And I wrote three reports, one on industry, one on the rail infrastructure, one on power, and one on the airport for London. They adopted my report for the airport in London. Do you know the south of England at all?
A little.
Right. My reports stated that RAF Manston in Kent.
Oh, yes, I've flown there.
Right. 3-mile runway, already built, 50 minutes from London by train. Why they're not doing it, I don't know.
Okay.
Well, I mean, that's just one thing. Anyway, we move on from that. That's the UK. That's...
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So you don't think that party politics can work in the Isle of Man, though?
No.
All right. So
pointing out, we'll just going back to that area there, Brexit. Right. I have put in my manifesto that the Manx government should tell the UK government that they want any matters impinging on the Isle of Man in these future negotiations with Europe to be sent to the Isle of Man in advance, to be approved by Tynwald before they are put on the negotiating table.
And what if the UK say no?
Well, this is it. I think we just write, Max. Well, why are you saying no? Under the Constitution, the Manx government and the elected members of the Keys and the members and legislative Count Tynwald, they are the government in the Isle of Man, and they are in charge of what goes on in the Isle of Man and its interests. And the UK government, under its constitution, is supposed to, under the Constitution, is to speak on our behalf,
yeah,
not on their behalf. And they should send things to us. Now, the word consult basically means we tell you what we've done after we've done it. I've heard that one before. And I read the letter in the paper that Theresa May sent to Alan Bell. And I'm afraid to say Virgil said, we'll tell you what we've done when we've done it.
Yes.
But I think it's very important because the negotiations are going to be very difficult. And I'm afraid to say they will, to keep their friends in the City of London happy, they may well trade off certain things in the Isle of Man and other parts of the UK to quid pro quo for London.
All right. Do you think there are any opportunities with Brexit for the Isle of Man?
Oh, yes. I've already talked to people in the fishing industry and people in the farming industry. I've told them they may have to move a bit fast on this one. That when they come out of Europe, there'll be new regulations for agriculture and fisheries. And I've advised that perhaps if they all got themselves together and wrote out new regulations themselves,
yeah,
rather than the UK making regulations and then coming over here and being rubber stamped, they could write regulations which would suit them in the Isle of Man and benefit them. That's just one point.
All right. You don't believe in increased independence from the UK, though, I don't think, do you?
The UK, we're a Crown Dependent Territory. UK represents defence and foreign affairs. I think the status quo is all right, but I think I put in my manifesto, what I don't want is any interference by the UK in the Isle of Man in the future, or how we run our economy.
But doesn't the two go hand in hand? You know, the fact that because of our links with the UK, because we're a Crown Dependency, do we have any say in whether or not they've got a hand in what we do?
Externally, they represent our foreign interests. Our interests, not their interests. Mm. They represent us. But internally, we govern ourselves, and we say we should be in charge. We are constituting, supposed to be in charge. That's why I say I don't want any interference internally in the future, because that would be breaching the constitutional relationship.
But no further moves towards independence for the Isle of Man, you don't think?
Well, if the Isle of Man wanted to do certain things in that direction, straight away, you're going to have to do a deal with either the UK, and they're going to send us a big bill, or another country. So embassies are going to represent our tourists around the world if something happens to them. Straight away. Everyone goes on, lots of people go on holidays. If something goes wrong, you go to the embassy. Once we, in so-called independent people went that way, fine. Which is it, the UK? Well, the UK said, well, you've got independent. Yeah, we're going to charge you £20 million a year.
Yeah.
Right, for that service. Or do it yourself. We're going to find another country going to do it. So people don't think about that sort of thing. The UK get a good deal with us. We get a good deal with them as regards. They can do things that are already there. So it's already there. We can just use the facilities.
All right. We've talked about national politics and other things. Let's have a look at the constituency itself. What are the big issues that people are talking to you about as far as Glenfarne and Peel are concerned?
I should think most people, I say, come back to the health thing, although it's an Ireland thing. See, that seems to be the thing that those people are worried about. Also, schools, making sure that there's enough teachers and classrooms, in the West, that is. Other things, people are a little bit worried about the sewage treatment plant that's being built. And recently, I've said it in the manifesto, and I said it recently, it's been found that a certain infection, a contagion, a virus, with a 30% mortality rate, which cannot be cured, has been detected coming developing in areas and beach areas in other countries. And there's question marks, it's not being killed by the normal sewage treatment plant, and there's question marks whether it's actually incubating in the sewage treatment plants. Now, I've said that I think the whole thing should be reviewed. I don't know the details of this information, but I think two things. One, I've always said, I think the pipes should go a lot further, and there should be it's a question mark now, should you pump sewage out in a bathing area? Should it be pumped out somewhere else?
Yeah.
And the third thing is, should we look at how it is treated? Because these particular plants, it would appear, are not killing this particular contagion. And if anything, there's question marks whether they incubate. So yeah, that's in the air. That has to be discussed.
And this isn't a local problem. This is an overseas problem, is it?
Well, yes, it's an overseas problem. But the thing is, it's the same sort of plant. So the whole thing's going to have to be reviewed in the light of this new information. I mean, last year, people just didn't know about this thing. So it's nothing it's peculiar about me saying something someone else didn't say. It's just new information.
If you're elected, Leslie, what sort of difference do you think you can actually make? I presume that you'll be able to hit the ground running.
Right. Well, first of all, I'll try to save £1 million, and I'll give you one. Westlands, the single flats in Westlands, they are one-bedroom flats, lovely flats, beautifully maintained. They're going to be demolished. Why? Because the latest regulation is these one-bedroom flats are slightly too small. And it's going to cost over £1 million to rebuild them all. Knock a door between two and make them into one. A few thousand pounds. But there again, you know, somebody is not going to get a building contract. I mean, basically, that's what's going on. We've got to kind of save. Well, people are just not thinking how to save money. It's just, as I say, money's just been thrown.
And in terms of what you can do about that, I mean, what would you do? Just ask questions in the House of Keys to raise awareness of problems like that, come up with solutions that way, and hope that people pick up on it?
Yes, just question. People just aren't asking questions. It's a simple thing. This is how money can be saved. There's lots of other things that are going on. But I say, there's this culture of throwing money at it. And they don't know any different.
Do you not think that in practice, though, you might be blocked effectively by the block vote of the Council of Ministers?
Well, if they want to block it, fair enough, but it's for people like you in the media and people in the newspapers to draw the public's attention to these people who are wasting money or spending money on things that does not need to be spent on.
OK. Where's your focus going to be? Is it going to be on national issues, local issues, a mix of the two?
Well, local issues are dealt by commissioners. National issues are dealt by MHKs and members of Tynwald. So there's a crossover between a local issue as an MHK representing Glenfarne and Peel, and also of MHK representing the Isle of Man as a whole. So in actual fact, as an MHK, you have a dual hat, if it were.
Yeah.
And I say there is a crossover over there, yes.
All right, we're at the end of our time, but Leslie Hansen, tell the people of Glenfarne and Peel why they should vote for you.
Because if you want good services, your money spent wisely, and no more asset strip, because one day we're going to run out of assets, vote for someone who can balance the books.
Candidate for Glenfarne and Peel, Leslie Hansen, thanks for joining us today.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys General Election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.